Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzzed Binging, where some people get buzzed and share opinions about TV shows. My name is Natalie.
And I'm her mom, Christy.
And we are going to have some special drinks and share some thoughts about some TV shows. And
movies. You name it.
We'll do it. We love it.
We do.
And if we don't, we'll tell you.
We have a lot of opinions.
And that's kind of what prompted us to do this podcast. Well, more specifically, we are going to talk about today what kind of sparked why we wanted to do this podcast, which is Bridgerton.
Right. So we started watching Bridgerton like everybody else during the pandemic. And I think we started like really seriously binging during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. But then when Bridgerton 2 came out, we felt the need to talk.
Yeah, I believe we had a 2 to 3 hour FaceTime call just talking about it after both of us had binged it.
Yeah, it's like, what is this? So because we had so many opinions about it, we thought we could share our thoughts.
And not annoy our friends and our family.
So here we are. So
annoying all of you. You're welcome.
Okay. Because we love you. So, here we are, and just to give you a little background with this discussion, and we are starting with Bridgerton, I am much more of a reader.
Absolutely.
I like books.
I like TV.
And after we watched the first season of Bridgerton, I read all of the books. Mm. So part of what I contribute to this is that perspective, like how the books are different. And Natalie's got a special view as well.
Well, it's not as special as that, but I did a lot of community theater and theater in general in my day, and I have a lot more of an actor's perspective on things, not necessarily film in particular, but just in acting, and so I'm going to try my best to show that perspective of like how these people are performing and some of the standouts and stuff like that, which I feel like everyone could do, but I hope I can share a little bit of a different perspective.
Well, you've also studied theater structure of, you know, episodes and shows and things like that. So I think you bring a very theatrical perspective to it. So
I'm very dramatic.
Very dramatic.
I'm very dramatic.
I want to be very Lady Danbury about this, so I'm going to try to do some of that.
I'm more Violet.
Oh god, I love Violet.
Oh my god, she's we're getting ahead.
So let's get started.
With season 1, episode 1 of Bridgerton, Diamond of the First Water.
Alright, so
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would like to preface the very first note I have on my notes is Julie Andrews is always a win, because her providing the voice of Lady Whistledown is just inspired. I love that they chose her for that, and I'm surprised they got her for that, but like, I'm so glad.
She is just the best. There is nothing negative to ever say about Julie Andrews, let alone her voice, which is like,
I would also like, before we get started like really talking about it, I would like to have a couple of disclaimers. First, we are rewatching this, as we mentioned before, so we will try not to like let the background knowledge that we have cloud what we watch, especially towards the beginning, but if that happens, I'm sorry, especially if you haven't watched it and you're watching it along with us, sorry about that. Two, this is not spoiler free. We will be spoiling all of it. Like, we will be talking about all of it. And also, I believe we do also, since it's buzzed binging, we do also have some drinks that we'd like to talk about.
Right. And so, you know, we're going to be doing this every episode. We're going to be talking about whatever beverage we are sharing with this podcast. So for this first episode of Bridgerton, Diamond of the First Water, because this is a fluffy, frothy, beautiful to look at show.
It's so
funny. I wanted to choose something that was pink and bubbly, and so I am having an Underwood pink bubbly can. Now, left to my own devices, truly, I would have gotten a really nice bottle of pink bubbly, but
we're on a budget, so and we are keeping that in mind for everybody else out there who wants to join us in our drinking and whatever.
Yeah, so Natalie, tell the audience what you're having.
Well, listen, I am here to provide the yoga alternative. What I mean by that, and we will probably end up shortening it to YA, the yoga alternative, whenever like my mom, Christy, who, again, is right there, she, whenever she did yoga and she watched some videos on it, I always noticed that there was the one person who did the alternative, which is what I would go with, because I don't want to do yoga, so it's, like, the easiest version of whatever move they're doing, or just an alteration of it. So I'm going to be the yoga alternative for drinking, and I'm going to be providing an insight of what non-alcoholic drinks that could complement the episode, according to me. And for this one, in a similar vein, I wanted something pink and bubbly, so I went with, I believe it's Schweppes ginger ale, but it's raspberry ginger ale. So it's still pink, it's still bubbly, and it's still really good and tasty.
And it has berry notes.
Very berry notes. Yes. So not Mary Berry, but very berry notes.
We would love some Mary Berry too.
We will not be covering Great Bears Baking Show, but we felt we needed to mention it.
Because it's awesome.
It's amazing. If you want like a genuinely just like, I don't know, a comfort watch.
Yeah.
Great British Baking Show. And if also, if you're hungry, watch Great British Baking Show.
Too. Please, God.
It might be a mistake, but you will not regret it.
Right. And finally, we do need to point out that not only is this not spoiler-free, oh my goodness, we are going to possibly.
Likely, possibly.
Definitely.
Curse.
Yeah, fuck.
And so, and if you are uncomfortable with cursing in general, we will try not to get too far as cursing is concerned. I don't feel like, neither of us really go too far as cursing is concerned, but we do say a lot. And if we get too passionate about things, there will definitely be cursing. Or if we just, I don't know, there will be cursing in this, just to give another disclaimer.
Right. So we check the explicit box for a reason.
And you need to listen to the explicit box because there will be cursing. Well,
and truly, some of these episodes...
Very explicit in a different way. Yes. So, and most people would probably be very horrified to ever talk about this kind of stuff with their mother. I'm not, so.
That's my bad influence.
Under the influence, yes. But I feel like it's better just because it's like we're pretty open with each other, and if you are not comfortable with those kinds of conversations, maybe skip one or two of the episodes, especially once it gets very raunchy towards the end of season one in particular. But, I mean, it's just a part of the show. It's Bridgerton. I mean, there's a lot of hot Bridgerton. British people having sex and causing scandals. And so, and that's why we love it.
It is why we love it. It's why we keep watching it. So,
over and over and over.
Diamond of the First Water.
The first episode of season one.
Now, you actually looked up the recap or whatever
I did.
It is.
And so, And to begin all of these podcasts, we're going to be giving a recap of the episode in case, well, first, if you forgot what happens in the episode, or if you've never watched it and you just wanted an idea of what we're talking about. I would recommend you watch the episode before you listen to the podcast, just because some...
Spoilers!
We'll get that, and also we are going to get into specifics. Like, I know I have a couple lines from the episode that and so I will be mentioning those, and if you want to experience it the way it's supposed to be with the actors saying it, I would recommend doing that. Anyway, what Netflix says is the synopsis of it is, Daphne debuts on London's marriage market as a new gossip sheet sets high society a-twitter. And Simon, the eligible Duke of Hastings, returns to town. That's the bare bones of what happened in this episode.
Yeah, that is the bare bones.
You meet a lot of characters.
You do. So we're going to kind of go through this episode chronologically. We both made notes, and I know that, like, many people have watched this show, so, mm-hmm. You know, I do want to kind of skip to the good parts, but there's so many good parts. So
yeah.
It's hard.
So that's why we're going chronologically, so that we can get to the good parts, but also, like, some little in-between spots that we really like or whatever. I do want to mention that I have a couple counters for this episode and for the seasons to come in general.
What are your counters? What are you using?
Oh, just you wait. So, as we all know, there are many Bridgerton siblings, one of which is Francesca. Nobody ever knows about Francesca because she's barely in the show. And it's a shame because I love Francesca.
This is going to be one of those things I'm going to talk about when we get to the book parts. Because, and I do want to do that toward the end of these episodes. But the Francesca thing, it's like, are we just not ever going to know about
she's Francesca? Right. Well, she's right there. Like, you might as well use her, but no. So one of my counters is the lines that Francesca has. And we are going to get through most of it in this episode because she disappears. So, but we will get to that. So that's one of my counters. The other counter is for sex. Not necessarily implied sex, but seeing the sex. Or like the makeout session going into the sex or whatever. So there's a lot of Antony in this, but we will get to that.
Whatever. And again, we're not going to spoil like things to come, but... When we get back to this subject.
Let me just say, one of these counters is going to be lower in season two, and we are very disappointed. Anyway, and the last counter that I have so far is whenever Simon has his shirt off. Now.
Like, that's a negative?
I never said it's a negative. The higher the number goes, the happier I am, mother. So here we are.
Sean Page is awesome.
Oh my god. We'll get to it, but I just wanted to tell you that when I say... the counter has gone up for one of these, that's what I mean. Okay. Anyway, I feel like we've done a lot of disclaiming. Let's get into it.
All right.
Let's go.
So right at the beginning, and one of the things that I love about the show, I love about the books, I love about all of it, is the family interaction, the way the mm-hmm. siblings interact. And right from the beginning of this show...
you see the dynamics. Yeah. It's amazing. And another thing, we all, like, both my mother and I have siblings. Different siblings, obviously. Well, yeah. All right, never
mind. Our family tree branches is what I was trying to say.
I mean, I have an older brother and she has an older sister. That's what I mean by different. And so we both kind of understand the different dynamics that comes with having a sibling, especially an older sibling. And so does my dad. My brother does not because he's the older sibling.
We're the babies. You've lived with and you see sibling dynamics. And this big family, mm-hmm. everybody's personality is very distinct. And so that is really cool to see. And, you know, right from the beginning, and this is a rewatch, I remember in season one really, really loving Eloise. And mm-hmm. she, like, right on from the beginning, so impatient. And I'm so impatient.
I totally get it. I feel like that's another thing that you and I just have so in common, that, like, we're both very impatient people. So, like, whenever things are just, like, whenever she's just yelling at Daphne to come downstairs because she's not ready yet. Well, I feel like that's more with me and you. Like, I yell at you, it's just like, come on, you can eat, just go ahead and do it. But, like... I feel like those sibling dynamics are very relatable, and I feel mm-hmm. like that's something, especially the first season, gets done very, very well.
Yeah, and you see more of it in the first mm-hmm. season, so I really loved that setup. I think it is one of those things I'd like to see more of as mm-hmm. things go forward, because you want to see the character development.
Absolutely.
And I think that is something that is really beautifully done. But, you know, who's not there?
Well, Francesca is there.
Oh, no, Francesca's there. Anthony's not there.
Oh, yes. Well, before we get to Antony,
I want to call him Antony, because I love
him. I'm calling him Antony, because it's what they all call him, even if it's spelled differently.
Well, right, I love the way it sounds, so we're going to call
him. Yeah, we're going more Antony and Cleopatra, and not Anthony.
Antony.
Anyway, one thing I did want to mention is that I love the sets. I think it's gorgeous, especially, like, the exterior of the houses, especially for the Bridgerton household, with all the, like, lilac or, like, all the vines and stuff like that. It's just gorgeous.
Yeah, it looks like it's Wisteria, I think.
Wisteria, that's what it is. It's to die for. And the interior is just gorgeous. And me and my mom, another thing is that we love period pieces. We love watching, like, Downton Abbey, and we love watching, like, just... those
Pride
kinds
and
of,
Prejudice.
We love Jane Austen. So,
any Jane Austen.
So
thing.
Regency era, kind of like that kind of thing. We love.
And just as an aside, Natalie was in performance of Sense and Sensibility, and she got to be Marianne, and so the clothes and all those things.
Yeah, it's
just
familiar.
Like, oh,
and
yeah.
It's really fun. And oh my gosh, that's
fabulous.
I love the Regency era. It's really fun, and mm-hmm. the fact that it's set in this era is really, really, really fun.
Yeah.
Let me see. Okay, now we're going to Antony.
Antony. All right. I have this note. Antony's ass.
Okay, Well, okay, let me give some context for the people who may not have watched the episode. Daphne is preparing for a presentation to the Queen, and that all of the Bridgertons, minus Antony at this point, are trying to get her ready and get her to the carriage so that they can go and present her to the Queen, and it's a whole thing.
Right, it's the whole family. I mean, yeah. it is a representation thing. Like, I think, this is another thing that I feel like the books don't do as well as, because the book, they make certain presumptions, right? Mm. But the show does really well to talk about, like, everything that Daphne does, everything that Antony does, right, is all reflective of them.
And there are very interesting conversations later on that we will talk about that, like, are very powerful, I think, to bring that point home. And so, and I can't wait to talk about that, but we're not there
sorry,
yet.
Sorry, skipping. Never mind.
Sorry. I will be...
Antony's ass.
Sorry. Again, people in this podcast are buzzed, and so there might be tangents, and that's what you're here for, I guess. Or otherwise, you would just watch the show and nothing else. Anyway, in addition to Antony's ass,
how buzzed are you? I thought you were just having dinner.
I don't know. I guess I'm just in a mood. I don't know. Anyway, my note for that part was that poor footman who has to stand there while Antony and Sienna do their thing.
Yeah. Well, and let's also talk about it's against a tree. How uncomfortable
is
that?
Yeah, seriously, you couldn't have gone anywhere else. And also, your poor footman. This, again, is sex number one for that counter. So,
ding!
Here you go.
Then they ride up to the palace, and I could not tell if this is the back of... it looks like St. James Palace to me, because mm-hmm. we've been to London. But it could also be the backside of, oh my gosh, Kensington.
Kensington?
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably more likely.
It does seem more likely to me, too. But it looked like, we passed by St. James Palace, and it looked like that entrance. So it's possibly that.
Either way, it's beautiful.
We're also big on the crown, so at some point we're going to do the crown, too.
Yeah, that's one of those. Oh, yeah, we need to do the crown. Okay, we'll get there.
For sure. But I want to say this, too, because Violet Bridgerton...
My queen! Yeah,
I mean, we both
adore
her.
We will also do Game of Thrones. We're also going to do Game of Thrones. Right. So that's why I said... Well, that's not why I said my queen, because Violet is a queen, and I love her.
Right. Violet's fabulous, and so I love Violet Bridgerton, and this kind of, she doesn't have a rivalry because she's clearly feels like her family's superior to, but
because she's correct.
But she looks at the Featheringtons as they're getting into the carriage, is like, hey,
yeah. Then there's now that we've talked about the Featheringtons, that is the other family that lives across the street and feels that they are almost rivals to the Bridgertons in a way that, to a certain extent, to, the Featherington daughters, Penelope, Philippa, and Prudence, they're all also being presented, and they are also looking for a husband, and they're concerned that Daphne is going to get most of the suitors, and they aren't going to get any. And there's some hostility.
Right.
More on the part of Lady Featherington than Violet, because Violet does not give a shit. And so it's kind of I think that's another reason why I love Violet.
Right. I mean, she's like, these are my kids, these are my family.
She's going to focus on them.
Right. And I love that, just that idea of rivalry, people trying to be a Bridgerton. Mm-hmm. And I think the Bridgertons as a clan know, hey, we got our shit together.
Yeah.
Or they seem to, but on the interior, there's stuff going on.
Yeah, of course. And that's another thing that I love that the show goes into. I also wanted to mention before we move on from we kind of moved on already, but Antony's sideburns is they're severe and very intense, and spoiler alert for season two, they are gone, and thank God, because my goodness, they are distracting.
Jonathan Bailey is gorgeous.
Oh, we love Jonathan Bailey. That he is still a handsome man, but those sideburns are very distracting.
Yeah, he's just gorgeous. But okay,
we're at the presentation.
I do have to know, because I love the way this is directed in a way, the Featheringtons can't even get through the freaking door. They're all crowding into each other and just all that stuff. It's just sad.
They're a mess. And poor, I believe Prudence faints.
And I do want to point this out. Since the last season, I learned Prudence, the actress who plays Prudence, is the daughter of Mr. Carson and Umbridge.
Which is our dream. Which is,
yeah, right. Like, and she, you know, Carson particularly, the actor, and I'm blanking on his name. Yeah, so Carson is... He does comedic things. He was in Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, I love Shakespeare in Love.
So fabulous as an actor generally. Mm-hmm. And so is Umbridge. So Imelda Staunton. And she's going to be on the Crown.
Jim Carter, right.
So now that I know that, when I see her, I see, you know, the pieces of them. Mm-hmm. But I also can see, like, the influence on her acting. And it's really kind of cool. And she kind of comes out a little bit more in the second season, too. So she gets more stuff
in the second season, which, good for her.
Yeah, good for her.
But we'll get there.
This season's a little bit about Philippa from a... Well, I'm Penelope. From a Featherington standpoint.
Yeah.
But they can't even get through the freaking...
But we'll get to Marina.
Okay.
These poor people don't know what we're talking about
yet. They don't know what we're talking about yet, but they're ready to go in. And I do. I had one other note for this, or two, actually, about Daphne. And I wasn't going to say up front, I love Daphne.
I do, too.
Sophie Dunivore is gorgeous.
Phoebe
Dunivore, I'm sorry. Is it Dunivore or Dunivore? Whatever. She is gorgeous.
Oh,
gorgeous,
my God, she's amazing.
And so she has this amazingly gorgeous dress, but what I love about her performance is that you see herself kind of steal herself, and it comes up again later, like she's like, I'm ready to go in now. I'm good.
She gets herself into the mind space, and you can see that, and it's very subtle, but it's great.
It's an actor who is about to be acting, right?
It's an actor playing a character who's about to act. And I love that. I will tell you, I love a show within a show in anything. So I get to see actors play characters and then act as the characters. And it's so fun, especially if it's like they're supposed to be bad. So Daphne is not. But I love that you pointed that out, because that's a big part of it.
Right, and it's all almost facial expression.
Like, it's all facial.
And it's beautifully done. I think she does such a great job of saying, let's do this thing.
Yeah, because she knows what she's there for, she knows what she wants, and she's going to get it.
Oh, and one other thing. Oh my God, the score this entire season is like, oh, so fabulous. I just love, like, the two cellos version of, like, everything. I mean, it's not the two cellos, but
I understand what you mean. I love the Glee reference, by the way. That's amazing. Another show I love is Glee. We will not be covering Glee because she does not want to watch it.
Well, that's not true. I've watched Glee twice with you.
You did not watch all of it.
I watched all of it the first time.
No, you did not. You did not. You admit it.
I might have.
Like, either way, we're not talking about Glee, but I love the Glee reference.
Well, we may or may not do Glee, but we're not going to do Glee right away. We might do Gossip Girl before we do Glee, but whatever.
No, I don't want to do Gossip Girl. I love Gossip Girl as a show, but the first season is the only season that I really love.
That's true. I feel that way about Glee, actually. Or maybe no. Okay, fine. there are definitely other episodes later in Glee that I liked. But
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so...
Anyway.
All right. So the score.
If we're still on the Prudence
the presentation.
Veins, okay. Here's the note I made. The queen, Daphne, comes in. She walks down proud. Her and Violet are very calm. She curtsies. The queen comes up to her, lifts her chin, and says, "Flawless, my dear." Here's the thing. She walked 30 feet and curtsied. Like, she didn't really do that much. And she's just like, flawless, you walked. And then you curtsied as you should. And it's just like, that's not the biggest accomplishment. But I mean, like, I guess if she walked the best of, they like say like 200 girls, good for her. But I don't know what she did that different. She didn't faint. I mean.
Right. So she's kind of right after Prudence. Like,
yeah,
up.
So maybe she's just by comparison.
But I do feel like, and at some point I do want to talk about the queen and her character and all of those kinds of things. I don't know that this episode is necessarily the best for doing that, but I feel like, you know, it shows the superficial of how women are, you know, what the cast is for women. And so I feel like
that's all
is
she needed
part of
to
it.
Do. Right. So it's like, yeah, right. She did what she needed.
Right, but she's also freaking gorgeous. So
yes. And then... Unless you have anything to say about the presentation.
No.
We get to the intro.
Right, the title sequence. The long
title sequence, the long version of the title sequence, which is gorgeous.
It is, and they should use it every single time.
Don't mute yourself whenever you say the first word. But I do the same thing, but it's either way. I feel like with the title sequence, it's just so creative, and you get to see like their kind of their story told through the branches of the tree, mm-hmm. and I really love that. I personally, whenever I'm binging something, I do appreciate a shorter intro, but much like Game of Thrones, I'm willing to wait through it because I love looking at it.
Right. Like Game of Thrones title sequence is one of those things that I looked forward to every single episode. Yes. So it was like,
it's not like it changed. Well, sometimes it did. Right. But it's just so interesting to look at.
And it tells part of the story. Absolutely. Right? And I felt like this long sequence really did, and I didn't really, I don't know that I noted that they had shortened it, and sometimes they even changed the music, you know,
yeah.
in different episodes, and that's kind of cool, mm-hmm. But at the same time, and I'm sure some of that was like, you know, expense and whatever, because it is, you know, that visual is I'm sure expensive, but yeah. it is so beautiful. The next thing, and I do want to say this, because, you know, the title sequence, which I loved, but is there more on the title sequence?
No, I don't have anything.
They do the first, like, full whistle down. Like, they're talking about the first publication. Ah, yes. And Julie Andrews' voice saying, "The worst bitches." Like, oh, my God. Julie Andrews.
Cursing. Mary Poppins cursing. Maria Von Trapp cursing.
And everyone
is so funny to me. And mm-hmm. She says it, and I'm like, girl, you just ended a person. Like, you just, like, annihilated that person. Whoever you talked to about being a bitch, whoever you directed that towards, you just annihilated them because you're Julie Andrews and you can do that.
And your voice alone
is amazing.
Is amazing. So she is fabulous.
I'm over here wishing I had Julie Andrews' voice.
Oh, you and me both. And then, like, suddenly, like, Francesca's disappearing again.
No, she speaks. I have another note where she does speak. I believe all she says is, "Lady Whistledown." But I noted it because that's it. But she also has, like, a little bit of attitude with it, which is why I love Francesca Bridgerton, because she has something there. Well, the actress is trying.
Pretty, and, you know, all of these things.
I feel like the thing is, it's like, what I'm trying to point out here is that it is wasted potential. Like, you could absolutely have Francesca, like, be a character, and they're just choosing not to. Even if it's not necessarily in the canon of the books, it's not like they're staying that true to it. So it's kind of like,
really not.
You really could just give her, not even like a storyline, but at least a little bit more, like, more, like, I feel like Gregory and Hyacinth, who are the youngest Bridgertons, have more to do with everything and more lines.
Right, and it really, it's frustrating to me because, and I'm going to throw this in there, Francesca does have a whole book to herself.
Right.
And it's actually an interesting story. And so you're just not vested in her right. in any way. And they've got, like, a little bit, they try to make Benedict interesting. I mean, it's like, you know, they do
try. Oh, we'll get to Benedict.
We're going to get to Benedict. But they try to, like, bring these characters along, but she's just this complete cipher, like, you know,
she's
like a nothing.
I feel so bad for her because
on many levels,
she deserves better.
And when we talk about, like, the book part, maybe I'll talk about the Francesca thing.
Maybe,
yeah,
we'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. Okay.
I wanted to say I do like Eloise's talk with Daphne after the presentation. It's been a minute since we watched the episode. It's been like since 2 days ago, but and that wasn't specific in my notes, but I believe she was talking to Daphne about, like, Daphne was telling her about, like, oh, this is what the queen said. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And then Eloise is just like, I really don't care. Like, why do you care this much about it? It's like, well, my choices affect you as well. And if I succeed, then you guys can succeed. And I really do like that, like, it's established at the very beginning. Like, hey, my choices really do affect you. And my lack of choices could hinder all of this. And so, and we will get to that with Antony and all that stuff. But it's like,
sure.
I do like that little talk. And it's I love Eloise, especially in the first season. However, we are going to get to some conversations where, like, the subtlety is lost yeah. and very lacking. And I prefer more subtle.
A little bit restrained, maybe?
A little bit more restrained. She's the contrarian, and
Well, she's such an anachronism, too. She's, yes. It's like she is a modern character that got into, like, Doctor Who's little, you know,
TARDIS.
TARDIS, and, like, when...
You can tell how much we know about Doctor Who.
Yeah, we've watched a little, but not a lot. And so, she's gotten in the TARDIS and gone back in time and put on a Regency dress. And
now she's talking about feminism. Right. Going to university. And we'll get to that, but it's just, like, I like the more subtle conversations that...
And she does have them with other people. Mm-hmm. One other thing in that, like, just post, you know, when they're digesting Daphne's presentation thing that I really liked is that they talk about Violet and her husband and, you know, the Lord Bridgerton.
Yes.
And how much their love affects the family.
Because like, because if you're growing up with parents who really genuinely love each other, which, thank God, mine do as well. That sounds really bad. But, like, you know what I mean? It's when you have that as the foundation of your family, you really want that for your foundation of your family coming, like, in the future. And that's what Daphne really wants. And she's also the oldest sister, so she feels the need to do it regardless of, like, if it's love. And we'll get to that, but she really does want what Violet and her father had.
Right, and I think that it's not just that she wants it, it's that she's now realizing that she might not get it.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of options out there that aren't great.
Right. So, and we will get to those options.
Yeah, because they present themselves very early.
I feel like if you are doing, like, a drinking game for the podcast, which it's basically a drinking game for us regardless, but if you are doing shots, do it whenever I say we'll get to that, because at this point you're going to be on the floor.
Lot.
I apologize. I'm a broken record.
Okay.
Either way, I do another thing when they're talking about Lady Whistledown. Lady Whistledown mentions it's so odd that the Bridgerton siblings are named alphabetically, and Violet says, "Your father and I found it orderly." And I found that so funny.
Right, we gotta keep track of all of you. It's a thing.
No, it's great.
Like, they knew they were gonna have 8. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, regardless, I mean, you feel like you're just going, like, you might as well start and just be like, let's just keep going. After you go through, like, 4, I feel like it's kind of like, yeah, let's just go ahead and keep this up. I mean, I like this name. All right, great. It starts with that letter. So might as well.
Well, yeah, parents do, like, try to have some sort of thought about naming their children. So I guess that was theirs, and good for them. It's orderly.
Ours, I mean, me and my brother both of our names start with N, but, like, I don't feel like that was planned. So.
It actually was.
Oh, was it?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. I did not know this.
Yeah, I mean, that's a separate story for some time. All right, so... Getting back to the actual show that we're here to talk about, I also, you know, the next note I have, and unless you have anything else about that little section, do you have anything else?
I don't have anything else about the Bridgertons in that section, no.
Girl, Lady Featherington, because we move right into Lady Featherington Lady Featherington things, like complaining about the smart, fat child that is yours.
Okay,
fat shaming,
okay,
awful.
And that's another, like, disclaimer, we are going to be talking about, like, how certain characters are viewed in a negative light, and it shouldn't be that way. I will admit, when I first watched the show, I did not love Penelope. I feel like the thing is, I just am so in love with Colin Bridgerton that I was jealous.
She's totally in love with Colin
Bridgerton. I am.
He is totally her type, by the way. Like,
oh my God,
visually, like, you know, John Mulaney, actor that plays.
All right, Mom, you're putting me on blast. Anyway, I am totally in love with Colin Bridgerton, especially in the first season. And so I feel like when I saw how Penelope was handling, like, not him being in love with her, I felt it too deeply that I hated her for it. And I'm just like,
well, she's another rival.
No, I was like, you're being so whiny. I'm like, if I were in that situation, I absolutely would be like that. But, like, I feel like with Penelope, I hate that her, most of the things that she's criticized for is her size, which is completely unfounded. It's ridiculous.
And also her intelligence. Like, she's reading also, a book. They're mad at her for reading a book. Seriously? What else is there to do?
I know it's supposed to be a commentary about, like, the era and, like, how, like, women were treated as far as, like, if they were trying to nurture their mind. And again, we'll get to that with Eloise. But when they're trying to nurture their mind rather than, like, focusing on other stuff, I know it's probably more of a commentary on that. However, I feel that Penelope's gorgeous. She really
she is.
The actress,
her skin is just amazing. She is beautiful.
The actress is absolutely gorgeous, and she does a great job. And again, we'll have more Penelope moments later on in the show, especially because she has a bigger role. But I feel that rewatching this, I like her a lot more because I think that what she's trying to do, as far as like how she's trying to handle her mother in particular, and her sisters, and all the stuff that's happening around her, is probably more similar to what I would do in that situation, which is just kind of take it, which is not necessarily the best thing.
But she lets it out. You know, we find out later.
Yeah,
she's letting it out in a different way. But I find, too, and that is an aspect of her as a person, as a character, whatever, and it becomes, you know, as the seasons progress, more of a thing. But she is much more sympathetic, especially early on to me. And she's in such an awful situation.
Yeah. And it's so sad because even just in the blocking of some of the scenes, some acting lingo over there. Blocking is just like how people move in a scene. But I noticed like whenever they're going to a ball, like the Prudence and Philippa are basically like arm in arm with their mother and Penelope's off to the side. And just in general, like, Penelope seems to just be forgotten most of the time, and whenever she is addressed, it's never in a good light. And it's so sad, and I feel that it's so... Obviously, it's for the character, but it's just, like, I don't know. I feel bad for her.
Well, right, and I know we're supposed to, and I think that there's a lot of truth to that. But unfortunately, it is based on something that is true in real life, too.
Yeah. And it shouldn't be. Shouldn't be like that.
And this is also where we introduce Marina.
Yes.
And Marina, of course...
Gorgeous.
Oh, my God. And her voice is so great. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Something I usually think about, but that is so true. I would just like another, like, just blanket statement. Everybody on the show, almost everybody is on the show, is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah,
and
for sure,
so many different ways. And you
got the sets, the clothes, and I know some of the clothes are anachronistic. Some of the sets and the pieces, are anachronistic. This is a fantasy.
Obviously,
this is not meant to be like 100% historically accurate.
We are going to talk about that. Whenever we say someone's gorgeous, we absolutely do mean it. Like they are just absolutely insanely gorgeous. And obviously, everybody has their type. But oh my god, all these people are just beautiful.
Oh
and
yeah,
it's insane. There are a few people later on, like some suitors that I don't like, but
they put sideburns on them too.
The sideburns really bring some people down, but and Colin's lack of sideburns is another reason why I just really like him. Anyway, we are introduced to Marina, who is the cousin of Lord Featherington, I believe.
Yes.
And so she's been taken in for the season, and she's going to be a part of the season and have some suitors later on.
Yep.
And she's just full of possibility. She's gorgeous, and she will provide some competition to the Featherington sisters along...
And to the Bridgertons.
And to the Bridgertons.
Right.
To a certain extent. And, yeah.
Yeah.
That's Marina.
That's great. But then the next thing they do...
You are introduced to Simon, the Duke of Hastings. And oh my God. I know that it's common knowledge that Renee Jean Page is absolutely gorgeous, but oh my God, he's amazing. Oh my God. And also, no, it's charisma. It's his... Oh my God, his face and
his voice is amazing. But he also does a great acting performance.
Oh no, exactly. The charisma and the acting performance, especially in later episodes, is out of this world.
Right.
It's insane.
Right, but even here, right at the beginning, like he has this interaction with Lady Danbury, and of course, I gotta say that I adore Lady Danbury.
Lady Danbury is amazing, and she's also introduced, and she is basically almost like a godmother to him in a way where it's like she's taking care of him as a ward almost.
But you know, the way she, like, you know, here he is, he's an adult, he's been traveling the world, he does all this stuff,
he's
the Duke, and
she tells him,
you're coming to my ball tonight.
And you have no...
This, like, facial regression into being a child again. He's like, yes, ma'am.
Also, another thing about that is... And there will be more about his background later on, but I noticed a slight stutter in his voice. I noticed the very subtle stutter whenever he, like, talked to Lady Danbury.
Or when he gets very emotional, too.
Yes, and I noticed that, and I was just like, oh my god, that's perfect. And again, you'll hear reasons why later on, and we'll probably do that in the next episode, because that's where you get most of his background.
Backstory, yeah.
And we will talk about it later on, but it was a great moment for me.
Yeah.
And so he's going to be going to the ball, even if he doesn't want to, even though he's an eligible duke, and he does not want to deal with everybody being thrown at him.
And so the next thing we do is we see naked Antony, which...
Sex number two.
Oh my god, you know.
Ding!
and this is like a little bit of foreshadowing, but he's such a passionate character.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that is something that really, you know, they explore a lot in this first season, and I don't want to really talk about season two, but we're not going to right now. But you know, as a character, I feel like that, you know, kind of raw
passion
is such a big part of who Antony is.
Yes.
And so we get to see that, and we get to see that with Sienna, and of course, you know, the Sienna thing is, I guess, common to that time too. Like,
yes,
oh my
a mistress.
God, I've got a mistress. Whatever.
Who is of a lower class than me, in a way. I mean, she's a job.
Like a kept woman, so she like
yes.
she needs like protection yeah. and whatever. And
she
money.
She mostly just kind of wants a place to settle down in, but she's not like attached as much to a certain. Well,
I think she's emotionally attached to him on some level.
On some level, I believe, yeah.
But I think she also knows full well what she is to him.
Yes.
And I think that's part of the reason, you know, as their relationship is kind of explored through this season, I'm kind of like, you knew what you were getting into, girl.
Yeah, and again, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Here we go again.
We're in episode one, and you know, I got pages here to go, but we're going to get to that.
Yeah, okay. I have nothing else to say until the ball.
Yeah, right. And so...
The balls in this show are amazing.
They are. And, oh my god, I do have to say, Colin's hair at this ball is
ridiculous. No, but Colin's adorable.
Oh god, that whole pompadour is just the
worst.
It's
cute.
It's so Elvis. Oh my god, it's just
and?
Awesome. That's true, you were in an Elvis show. I guess that's another thing about me.
I was in an Elvis show.
She was in an Elvis show, but you know, no.
Although no, I was not taken in that show, I was not taken in by the pompadour. However...
no, she was not. But yeah, I find, and there's so much that they lay out the dynamics of the society. You know, Lady mm-hmm. Feathering talking about light skirts, Antony being so freaking overprotective of
yes.
Daphne. Oh my god.
Oh my goodness. But before we get into Antony's thing, I do want to say a couple things about the costumes.
I have
a favorite dress, least favorite dress for this episode. I don't know if I'm going to have any least favorite dresses going forward, but I definitely do have favorite dresses for each of these episodes so far. For least favorite dresses, Penelope's with the yellow one with the big ass butterfly on the front. It was not doing her any favors. She's still a gorgeous girl, but it did not do her any favors. And I feel like that's the point, but still. Then my favorite is probably Daphne's lilac ball gown. It's so pretty. It's so intricate. A lot of Daphne's dresses are going to be my favorite. It's just so pretty. Anyway, I have in my notes, Antony, back the fuck off. Like, I get you want the best for her, but seriously.
Right. And you know...
That's verbatim what I put down.
Right. He's so overprotective for her. And I will talk about, like, the book thing, but that is... One of the elements that Daphne has to overcome is, like, the entire one in this series, but in the book she has other things that are kind of obstacles to her, like, having an easy time on the quote-unquote marriage market, which I still find, like, disgusting.
But the show focuses more on Antony trying to... I understand where he's coming from. He wants somebody with good prospects. He wants somebody who will treat her well. However, he's not letting her do any of this for herself, and she's not getting the chance to even explore any of this.
But she manages him. And that's what I love about Daphne. Like, there's a point even in this ball where she's like, it comes across, it's possibly passive-aggressive, but she's kind of like, I'll go ahead and get my own lemonade, thanks.
No, you've done enough for me already. Thank you. I'm going to go get my own lemonade.
Yeah,
I was just like, yes.
She says it in this nice, sweet, diplomatic kind
yes,
of way.
She's very diplomatic.
Antony's going to take it from her. Mm-hmm. And when it's couched the right way, and she knows how to do it. She knows how to manipulate him, which is like,
it's
you
so
go,
useful.
Girl.
Yeah, go, Daphne.
You go, girl. But then she runs into her book.
And then there is Lord Burbrook, and he is the worst, and we hate him.
He's so awful.
And he is much older than her, and he is trying to get her to be his bride.
He is not one of the worst people.
No, he's not, and no shame to the actor. I'm sure if he were able to style himself and do his own thing, I'm sure he is much more handsome. But the way they present him in the show, in particular, is not very flattering. And again, no hate to any of these actors. They're all doing a great job. And we love to hate him, so there you go.
Right.
He's very slimy. He's very, very gross, and he's just really wanting Daphne's
attention. He's so
very
entitled.
He believes that he deserves. He will get Daphne. He owns her in a way. Like, he thinks he owns her, and it's disgusting. It's reminiscent of the time, I suppose, when he wanted arranged marriages, but he's not even arranged to her yet. He's not even arranged to be her main suitor anyway, and I don't understand why he has this whole complex about, by the way, Lady Whistledown named her the Diamond of the Season, and so she's the most desirable, according to the Queen, and Lady Whistledown agrees. And so they're expecting her to be swarmed with men, and she is, but Antony scares all of them away, and we will see the consequences of that very, very shortly.
Right. But one of the things that happens at this ball is this meet cute situation, right?
It's so great. She's running away, basically almost sprinting away from Burbrook, which I love. And she is going and trying to, like, just get away from him because he just keeps bugging her. And she runs into Simon. She doesn't recognize him or know who he is, but she's just like, please just talk to me so that I can, like, she doesn't explain, but she just is like, all right, so what's your name? And he's just over here like, you don't know my name? And I'm like, dude.
There are a couple of things that it almost felt a little bit like a modern twist on the Pride and Prejudice meet cute thing. Like, you should know who I am, and of course everyone's after me because I'm the Duke of Hazzard.
Yeah, I'm just so broody. I'm just over here.
I don't need anyone or want everyone. People just, like, flock to me. It's a thing.
Though he doesn't like people walking to him.
Right, and she has this kind of embarrassment, which, again, it's the same thing that kind of happens with Elizabeth Bennet.
Yeah, because he thinks it's a tactic for somebody to get their daughter to talk to him and, like, to form a connection.
Right.
Because that's all the other people, what they've been doing to him all night, and he's what he was trying to avoid.
Right. And before we get too far with that, do you have anything else on that specific thing?
Not that specific thing, but I do want to circle back to the really quickly. Whenever the Bridgerton brothers, Benedict, Antony, and Colin, talk to Lady Danbury, it is the funniest thing ever.
I love their interactions. Oh, my God.
Okay, to set the scene, they're all just talking to Daphne, and Lady Danbury approaches, and they all try to run away, and then Lady Danbury's like, you are not going to run away from me. And they're just like, hello, Lady Danbury. Because they know she's going to rip into them, and it's so great. Sorry, that was just a really quick
thing. And I wanted to circle back to one thing about Colin, and this is kind of like a foreshadowing thing, too.
Mm.
Colin mentions that he's going to start his big trip in Greece.
In Greece,
and so the fact that he has this trip already planned, I think, is important.
There's a timeline, and, like, you have almost an expiration date on how long he's going to stay
season. But the other part of it for Colin, for me, is, like, toward the end of the season, there's a suggestion that he's running away from things.
Mm.
He's not. This has been his plan. And it's been his dream, kind of, all along. So,
and I feel that would have...
He's getting back to it.
I feel like another thing is that it would have stayed his plan regardless of what happened at the end.
Possibly,
in the end, regardless. I feel like he probably would have gone through with it to a certain extent anyway.
Right.
But
right.
Again, another thing we're going to get to.
Yes. Right. But
we just have so many things.
My next note is... And I'm cursing that. Antony fucks up matchmaking.
He's the worst matchmaker in the entire universe. He literally tells
him... He's like, let's leave early, cuz.
Well, also, another thing about Antony is that him and Simon are friends from University Oxford. And so they spent a lot of time together, and they were off being rakes together.
Because Antony is for sure a rake.
And that's also Simon's reputation as a rake, and just kind of doesn't care what everything's doing.
For those of you who don't know what a rake is, in Regency times, these are men who get around.
Man whores.
I love you.
I love you too, Mama. Anyway, I think that's the way I said it, too. yeah, Auntie is an idiot and basically tells Daphne, oh, let's leave the ball and not have you interact with anybody.
You don't dance with anybody. What the hell is this shit?
Yeah, and it's, and I feel like, and Violet's like, I'll stay with her. Like, it's not a problem. She's just like, no, leave them wanting more. It's like, you have not given them anything. What would they want more of? Avoiding people? I mean, it's just like, I understand where he's coming from to a certain extent, but it's so stupid. Like,
this is another area, though, like, as a parent, I look at Violet, and I get exactly what she's doing. She's like, I'm going to give you a chance to get this right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to try it your way for, like, 15 seconds, and then...
We're going to go back to my way because it's better.
because I actually know what I'm doing.
She literally went through this especially from a woman's perspective, and as basically, they say Antony's the head of the household, but no. Violet Bridgerton is the head of the Bridgerton household.
And she is so freaking
And
great.
She is amazing, and she's we love
great.
Her.
She is great.
We are Violet stans, and we are so happy that she's here.
Anyway. All right, so the college all end up going to where?
Marina.
Yeah.
At the Featheringtons.
Yeah, and that includes
And I mean, it's he is very interested in Marina because who wouldn't be, honestly? Like, she's gorgeous, and she's not really from the area, so it's not like anybody really knows her that well, so they're all just kind of interested in her.
Right.
Not that they're all necessarily there for that, but like still. So they all go there. She literally gets a puppy, which comes in later. Literally, like, you see, like, Penelope playing with the puppy, and it's so funny because she's third-wheeling Colin and Marina talking, and she's just on the floor with the puppy, and I love that so much. I made sure to make a note of that because I love that so much.
Right, so that's what's going on at the Featheringtons' house. At the Bridgerton's house, no, I'm sorry, did you know about the Featheringtons?
No. I wanted to correct you because some people do come to the Bridgerton household, but they are turned away.
Right.
By Antony because he's a dick. And he does not know what he's doing.
So bad.
And Antony literally just like, he's the worst. Like, he's not doing anything to help.
He's not being a good big brother. So.
No.
But one of the things that you see, and again...
Also, I have a big brother. I'd not trust him with this regardless, but especially in back then, if he ever did pull this shit with me, I'd be so mad.
Should we have a notes for Nick section?
Like, Nick is my brother, by the way.
Notes for Nick.
Nick, don't do this shit.
Okay. So, but one of... Again, you see the sibling interaction the Bridgerton has because no one else is really allowed in until, like, Berber gets there later. Mm-hmm. But Francesca is there, and she's lovely, but she doesn't speak.
I wrote down, Francesca is right there, and they do nothing with her. Also, she needs to get her shoes off the couch. I don't like shoes on the couch, so when I saw her just, like, casually have her shoes on the couch, I was like, oh, God, no. Maybe, you like, just don't. But, yeah, Francesca's right there. She's just sitting there, and she does not say a word because my counter does not go up. And so, and Violet just is so over Antony at this point. Like,
yeah,
she's
getting so
done.
Frustrated. And then Berber shows up.
And I love Eloise's reaction because Eloise is sitting next to Daphne on the couch, and Berber comes in, and Violet suggests, all right, let's just give them a moment or whatever. Like, hey, Eloise, aren't you going to visit Penelope? And Eloise is like, I think I'm going to stay here. And
she's protective of her sister. Because
Daphne's like holding on to her for dear life. Like, please don't leave me. Please don't leave me. Again, like a Jane and Elizabeth moment with Mr. Collins in Prejudice, where she just does not want to be left alone with this man. And Eloise is eventually like forced to go. And she's just like, oh, I'm sorry.
But even like right after Eloise leaves, this is a Daphne acting moment. And what she says is, and what she has that response is that facial response, that perfect reserved disappointment, like,
there's another moment, and again, another person that I love and who's kind of underrated in the Bridgerton household is Hyacinth. I love Hyacinth.
Okay. And I have to say this right here because Hyacinth from all the books, everything is my favorite character.
My mom's favorite.
I adore Hyacinth.
She's so funny. And she has a moment where Berbrook is talking to Daphne and she just laughs at him. And it's so great. And I'm like, girl, yes, I love you.
I think what I love about Hyacinth is like she's a mix of Daphne and Eloise. Like she has that kind of independence and intelligence and sense of humor. But
she wants what Daphne wants as well. She has that ambition for that kind of life, to a certain extent.
But she's not ugly about either side.
But yeah, she's not resistant to that kind of idea of a life for herself, but she also has a lot to say about it, and it's great.
Well, Well, and I, you, to her credit, as the character develops, Daphne has a lot to say about it too. But she has to find a way to say it that is true to her.
Yeah, Hyacinth from a young age, just, and she's the youngest.
Yeah,
and but she, her and Gregory have a lot of fun sibling moments where, like, since they're the two youngest, but she's taller and that kind of stuff. But again, that's going to be later on.
Yeah, I have a note that Hyacinth is great too.
She's great.
And so the next thing we see is, like, Colin and Penelope.
I put down, I understand Penelope, I love Colin too.
It's like friend zone.
So sad. It's I get it, like, Colin doesn't see her that way. And that, again, I can understand it from his perspective of, like, he never really thought about her in that way. But I feel so bad for Penelope because I feel like we've all been there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And it's painful to watch, and I think she handles it, you know, the actress does a great job expressing that, and again, not over the top.
Yeah.
Which I think is beautifully done.
Yeah.
The next thing, do you have any more about that?
No, I believe the next thing is the horse ride with Antony.
Oh, yeah.
Where Daphne is basically like, fuck off and let me do my thing because this is my future and this affects everybody else. And you understand that, but you're not letting me do anything with it because this is what I've been trained to do. Like, this is her whole thing. This is what she's been brought up to do. She's prepared for it. Just let her do her thing.
And get out of the freaking way, you moron.
Antony does not understand that because he does not understand how she was brought up because he was brought up in a different way.
Right, because, and he's had, and you see more of it in the second season, but he has to be the head of household in many respects. Yes. And he hasn't done the social part of it. Obviously, he's not done the social part of it like he's supposed to.
Yes.
But he's been doing the business side. And so it really is very interesting to see different aspects of his character. And I keep hitting the mic at the thing. my hands are just going because they do.
Yeah. Unless you have anything else to say about that, the next thing is
Simon.
It's not naked. He's shirtless. And that's the first one for Simon shirtless. Ding. Anyway. This next part is Penelope on the floor third wheeling with the dog, and I love it because I relate. Like, I would just be on the floor with a pet.
I'm a fun friend. I play with the dog.
And I just love that they brought the puppy back. Like, she's just holding the puppy when she was talking to Colin earlier as well, so she's basically just claimed the puppy. The puppy does not come up again. However, he is great.
Oh my god, Lady Danbury. And,
before we get to that, Lord Featherington is really creepy. Anyway.
Well, and my opinion of him goes from...
into the trash can.
From, like, really creepy to, like, ew.
I hate you. Then we go to the opera, where Violet and Daphne go to the opera, and they meet Lady Danbury there, and they sit in her box, and...
life goals, Lady Danbury.
And Lady Danbury and Violet come up with a plan to set Simon and Daphne up and hold a dinner and just kind of not force it, but like try to make them see,
give
hey,
them
maybe,
an opportunity.
Yeah. Give Daphne an opportunity to reach high or just like at least get a chance to like talk to somebody.
Talk to somebody who's like
who's
at
a
her
potential
level.
Suitor.
But who's really at her level though. I mean, like Verbrook's a potential suitor.
Yes.
The Duke, Simon, is at her level. Right,
yeah.
Right, but he's at her level.
In many respects.
Right, I mean, socially, obviously, economically, he's a bit above her from a station standpoint, but as a human, they are compatible. And I think both Violet and Lady Danbury
see that.
See it.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that one of the things I love about both of them is they are really great at, like, the character setting.
They're partners in crime, and I love
them. Well, especially this season. But, you know, they both, like, have this ability to, like, kind of cut through the crap from a character standpoint and find a way. And this is one of the things that Violet does in the books too. Like, she really finds a way to communicate to her children. Like, I understand you as a person. You're standing in your own way.
Yes.
And so I feel like that is a, again, like I said, life goal.
Yeah. And then we go to the dinner. At the Bridgerton house.
I love the dinner.
It's so great. Another chance to show the family dynamics that I love. And again, that's where the line with Hyacinth and Gregory, where she's taller. But even though Gregory's older, she's taller, so she gets the same.
Yeah.
I love that. I can't relate, but I love that.
And Francesca speaks
twice.
Woo!
So we're at 4 on the Francesca Speaks counter, and it will not go up for a long time.
Well, I love, too, that Eloise and Francesca, too, because they're kind of interacting with each other, but she is picking up on the banter. And
yes, again, she notices with Simon and Daphne, and her reactions to it, and this is another ode to the actress, like, her reactions to it are hilarious.
Well, right, and again, you know, she is, in many ways, especially the first time you see this whole series, like, you almost can see it through her eyes. There's a little bit of, like, the modern perspective that you can get from her,
mm-hmm.
Which, you know, the character is that person, and I think that is, you know, somebody that we can identify with.
Yeah.
And she's loving it.
I love the banter with Simon and Daphne. It's really, really fun, and I just love it when they have that, because it's very natural, and they play off of each other very well. The actors have amazing chemistry, and it's showcased throughout, and it's so great.
Well, and you know, they both have the banter shows that they have a sense of humor.
Yes,
and I like when characters like have that humor and have that.
It's not all serious. It's not all business. They want to talk to each other about other
they
stuff.
They like, well, I mean, well, and of course, at this point, they're acting like they don't, but they like each other.
They like each other. They like talking to each other. They like the conversations that they have.
They like the level of conversation mm-hmm. that they're having. Because
they can't have this with everybody else.
Right, exactly. They're intelligent. They're honest. They make fun of, like, the other crap that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the fact that they both are insightful enough to actually see it, feel it, whatever. I think they start to appreciate that about each other, which is what this whole dinner was about.
Yeah.
And this is part of where I love, like, right after Viola comes in.
Talks to Anthony.
Fuck you, Anthony.
When Anthony mentions, oh, it's my responsibility, it's like, oh, responsibility. You have no idea what the responsibility is, and you really need to, like, wake up. Like, She also mentions that she knows about his extra apartment where he and Sienna usually meet up, and it's apparently not in the woods, so I don't know why they were there the first time against a tree. Either way, to each their own. But she mentions that she knows about it, and she doesn't necessarily say, you need to stop. It's more just like, you need to understand that you have to sort your priorities out, and if your priority is to help Daphne, you need to let Daphne do her thing, and you need to listen to me.
Well, right, and she says a couple of things, like, and again, some of this, and I find this interesting, I would love to, like, I know there have been, you know, backstory books and that kind of stuff about the Bridgerton family that Julie Quinn has done. There's not one, to my knowledge, about Violet and her husband.
Oh, that's a shame. Right, I want
but
to know.
Well, one of the things she says is, reformed rakes make the best husbands. It's like,
yeah, that is
something she says. It's probably like, hey, your daddy did this shit too.
You can do it too, and maybe stop.
And get your act together and understand what your role really is.
Yeah.
If you want to be like your father, if you want to actually step into his shoes, do it.
But that's another thing. When she says that, he doesn't necessarily take it the way that she meant it.
Well, I think it's just that he doesn't understand.
He doesn't understand
anything.
And he just doesn't. However, I feel like, when the way he takes it is, all right, I need to set her up, like, immediately. Like, not necessarily just give her a chance to
explore. I need to break up with Sienna in a rude and
he's such a dick after sex. Like, immediately they're laying in bed. The next scene, they're laying in bed, and he's just like, I don't want to see. We can't see each other anymore. Just leave. I don't care about you. And she's like, you said you would always protect me. He's like, no. And so it's like, I don't really care about him and Sienna at all. However, that's not the way to go about this, Anthony.
Right. And that's the thing about Anthony is he has the maturity. And, you know, you see this, it's maybe a trope with guy characters. I don't know. But, you know, emotionally, like, he has two speeds. It is, I'm in love with you, I'm not in love with you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we'll see that later on, because it's fucking stupid. There's no middle ground.
Right.
It's so stupid.
Right. And there's no, like, nice transitional.
There's no transition period. You're just gone.
No, right. It's like, I've made the decision.
And it makes coming back so much more awkward, because how are you expecting her to react to that? If and when.
Foreshadowing here.
If and when he comes back to her, how is she supposed to respond to that? Like, she seemed to have pretty clear feelings towards him and him towards her. And then he just annihilates her and is just like, no, I don't want to be with you. And it's just like, well, fuck you then, I guess.
Yeah, it's just blah. Blah.
And then the next scene, this is just before the ball, but I wanted to note that I noticed there were sores on Daphne's back when they're putting her into the corset for the ball. There were sores on her back from the corset, and I really liked that touch.
Right, and you know, again, it shows how...
You put up with a lot.
Yeah, you put up with a lot to do this.
Women put up with a lot.
That's true.
That's true now. It was true then. It's true now.
Yeah, that's true. Absolutely. And so the next thing is the Vauxhall Ball.
Yes.
Which, again, you know, the music is so great.
Yes.
And the dancing is in perfect sync.
The dancing is great.
And it's just, yeah, it's amazing.
The lighting's great. I think the whole atmosphere of that ball is great. Cressida Kalpa is a bitch. And
hell yeah.
She pours her drink on Penelope for no goddamn reason.
Other than she's a rival, right? I mean, like, and she's not even really a rival. She doesn't even see her as a rival.
Penelope just doesn't care. Penelope obviously does not care about this, and Cressida just wants to ruin her life. And she's just like, I'm just going to pour this on you and just ruin you. And then Colin, the sweetheart that he is, comes in dances with her. Oh, come on.
Colin is great. I said he's great.
But you, when you said, oh, you're so, it's like, well, come on. If you saw that, that's so sweet.
It is.
And it's another thing that I'm just like, I was just jealous when I first watched it. But, like, I think that that is just so sweet. And you can tell, with some of their banter, is just like, you can tell they're great friends. And obviously Penelope wants it to be more, but, like, he's such a sweet person and
he's a good guy to her in particular.
And he understands that, like, he sees how people treat her. And he does not like that one bit. And when Cressida does that, he immediately is just like, I don't want to talk to you, Cressida. And it just, like, goes off and dances with Penelope. Even if she's uncomfortable with dancing, she's doing it with Colin and it makes it better. And it makes her feel better. And that's so sweet.
Yes, it is. I noticed, too, I mean, do you have anything else about Colin?
No.
Simon comes in, and he's one of those acting things where the girls are all like, hey, you look just like your father. And he just immediately shuts down. Yeah, like, I mean, it's all facial, but it's like...
That's all next episode, though, but
You understand why next episode.
No, absolutely, like, I understand, but maybe you're still...
here, and I feel like that cold response is like, you know, it gives you an insight into how he feels about his father.
And obviously there's background there.
Right. And the whole reason he's in London is his father.
His father is dead, by the way. His father has recently passed away, and he needs to settle his accounts and his matters and all that kind of stuff. He needs to settle some things in London. That's why he's here, and it just happened to be in the season, and he's being forced by Lady Tambury to go to these balls, even though he does not want to. And he has made it pretty clear that he does not want a wife.
Right. I don't have anything else at that ball other than, like, gorgeousness. So.
You have nothing else at the ball?
No, go.
Antony.
Oh, I have the Antony thing. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. They cut to the Featherington with the maid and the sheets, and I was like...
Oh, that
I'm,
part.
I'm kind of like... I remember when we were watching this in the first season, I'm like, what?
Okay, to be clear, I think before the ball, and I feel like even before, like, the whole corset thing that I noted... You see Marina in her bed, and she's looking at her sheets, and she gets very, very upset.
They're not, you know, 500 Egyptian cotton, whatever.
Because you just see her get very mad and kind of, like, bunch them up and just get very, very angry and kind of scream or whatever. And that's all you get, and it immediately cuts away from her. And it's just like, what the fuck was that? Are you mad at your sheets for some reason? Because it has not been clear how long she's...
Not the Egyptian cotton.
Anyway, I think that, like, her response to it, like, I feel like when I first saw it, I had no idea what the fuck was going on. Obviously, there's context, it's explained now, but it's her getting mad, and it's just, like, you have no idea how long she's been there, which is a big factor in, like, why she's mad, but, so you just see her get mad, and it's just, like, okay, why are you mad? She has missed her period.
Right.
And so she is very upset, and the maid catches on when she takes the sheets because she's noticed that it's been about a month, and she is not bled. And so she goes to Lady Featherington, of course, and Lady Featherington confronts Marina about this, and she's just like, oh my god, you were going to ruin this family.
And right. So all of this is going on background. Like, they're yes. cutting between the ball and this, which is why my notes are kind of, like, all over the place.
Yes. I believe before we have the whole confrontation with
Lady Featherington
and Marina, you have Antony fucking yes. up.
My note does says, this idiotic thing with Berwick.
Antony sets Daphne up and arranges a marriage between her and Burbrook. It's not necessarily set in stone because Daphne, there's no proposal yet. She's not been proposed to, so it's not like she has accepted anything, and she definitely isn't. And so Antony basically is like, all right, so I've arranged with Lord Burbrook. He's a good guy or whatever. He has no debts. I don't think he's mean to women or whatever. You will see how messed up that is later.
Yeah, there's shit Antony ain't gonna know.
Yeah, and I feel like Antony's seeing it from, like, he doesn't know these people that personally, so it's not like he's that much of a judge of character. He's clearly not that good of a judge of character. He is not Violet. He does not have the intuition and or instinct. Anyway, so he does that. Daphne's pissed, as she should be. And she's just like, nope, I'm not doing that. And she walks off.
Well, in this day, she'd be like, hell's not.
Hell no.
That is not happening.
Not doing that. Fuck off. And so she runs off into the garden. Then Marina and Lady Featherington having their confrontation. Yeah. Marina is basically like, you don't understand any of what's going on with me. Well, she doesn't understand the context of what's going on with her. She's all on her high horse, and Marina clearly does not want to be there. And then Lady Featherington slaps the shit out of her. And I'm just like, okay.
That's a bit excessive.
Very, very excessive. Like,
but that's Lady Featherington. She's
very dramatic.
She's good at being a villain. Mm-hmm. I hate her character, like, so much. And I know that there are people that are like, oh, Lady Featherington. It's like, no.
I don't understand that. And if you like Lady Featherington, good for you. I'm glad you can see something in this character. And again, all these are just our opinions.
Right.
If you like a character that we don't really like all that much, or if we like a character you don't like that much, that's fine.
Right, exactly.
We're all allowed to have our own opinions. I personally hate Lady Featherington, and I don't care about her
right.
or any of her storylines, like, to be fair.
Right. But anyway, so then we cut to the garden.
Yes, the garden is where all the shit goes down. So Daphne is in the garden and Burbrook comes in. And Burbrook's all like, oh, so I hear you've heard. I'm so excited. And then she's just like, not now. I believe it's Nigel or whatever. And he's just like, oh, so we're using our, like,
first names and Christian names.
Okay. And he's just like, I am not going to marry you. She basically just like, fuck off. I'm not marrying you. And he's just like, yes, you are. And
he acts like he owns her.
Exactly. That's what I mean when I said earlier. He just acts like he owns her. She is not a fucking horse, you asshole. And so and he starts, like, grabbing her and touching her and, like, being very forceful with her. And just, like, she's just like, get away from me. And then you see Simon, he's, like, coming towards the garden.
He hears it, yeah.
He hears it. He starts running towards it. And then, but before he can do anything, Daphne just punches him and knocks him unconscious, like, and it is amazing.
It is amazing because, of course, I don't think in real life that would happen.
No, I don't think she's that strong, but, I mean, if you are, good for you, Daphne, but, like, I don't know how, maybe it was the angle, I don't know.
Right.
But she's
and of course the actress is, like, my size, so she's not, like, this big, burly, you know, person.
No, he's a grown man, and she just, like, knocks him out with a single punch to the eye. And I was like, all right, good for you, I guess. He's like on the ground, and she's just like, oh, God. God. And and then, come on, stop. Anyway, Simon comes in, and he's like, holy shit, that was amazing, I'm impressed. And I'm just like, yes, as you should be. And she's just like, oh my god, I'm in the garden alone with two guys. Oh no, 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 this is a bad, bad, bad thing. Oh no. And then I think Burbrook, like, is just like, will you marry me, Ms. Bridgerton, from the ground? And, like, Simon's just like, that is the most unromantic proposal ever. And I'm just like, yes, Simon, you're correct.
Simon, I love you.
And so she's...
Of course I love him anyway.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. And, well, I'm sure there are people who don't, but whatever. We do. But anyway, so...
then he proposes the ruse. I love
this. I love that he proposes
I love this. His idea.
So you have a little moment with, like, to all the boys I loved before, which I know you didn't watch, Mom, but I did. And it's... So basically, they're going to pretend to be a couple so that Daphne seems more desirable to the other men, and people will just leave Simon alone.
I've written down the quote, and of course it is almost identical to what you said, that it makes me unavailable and
you desirable.
But I also have a note, his voice is so
Oh my god, yes, I love his voice.
You're desirable. Yes.
Yeah. Even if it's a little bit cliche, like, I mean, yeah. The whole, like, arranged thing where it's like, oh, we're going to pretend to date so that people can get jealous or back off or whatever. I really do like it because in this setting, I feel
it's
like
organic
it works really
to
well.
It. It's organic to the yeah. story. And yeah.
And you can understand why these two people in particular would have that arrangement. Like, they want to play the game, and, like, it's not just like, oh, I want to find love or whatever. Like, she does, but she also just needs somebody other than Burbrook. And so it's kind of like she wants options. And so you can understand the reasoning behind, like, all of that. So it's really, I think it works really well. And then they go back in hand, ooh, the scandal. They walk in hand back to the ball. And they dance together, and he's just, like, looking into my eyes. I'm like, okay. And and then it's just, like, get closer to me. I'm like, all right. And so they dance together, and they're looking into each other's eyes. And, oh, my God, these actors have great chemistry.
They
it's
do.
Insane.
They
have
do.
Really
but,
good
chemistry. And I want to note this, too. This is, like, a filming thing and just, you know, staging whatever. But... there's such a beautiful juxtaposition of how these scenes are intercut. So they've got the conversation in the garden being intercut with them walking back into the
yes.
ball and the dancing with the ball and this conversation.
And the fireworks in the
this
background.
This is what we're going to do. And there's, I saw something or heard something where they talked about the lighting being very, like clubbing.
Yes.
Like being,
very clubby, yes.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
very
and
true.
It's just, and the
that's
music,
not
and I've
like
talked
the whole
to,
clubbing thing is like, yeah.
Right, but the music is so great
yeah.
for this, too. And it just, it's such a romantic
moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really, really is. And so I love that.
And that is, unless you have anything else to say, that's the end of the episode.
Right, it is. So going through the episode, that's it. I'm going to talk about a couple of things that are very, very different from the book, because there are some things...
We'll
that,
do a SparkNotes version of this, because
oh,
we know
yeah,
you've been here
yeah.
for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So the biggest things are, you know, I read The Duke and I, which is the book on which this is based.
Mm-hmm.
Daphne, in that book, is not the diamond.
Oh,
she is also in her second season out. So
oh,
she has not gotten a husband. She has been, and you know, so what are considered her obstacles are, one, the overprotective brothers, because it's all three of them, like they'll like form like a shield wall almost.
That's so
like,
funny.
At
I love
dances.
That.
But the other part of it is that she's kind of
seasoned.
No, she's kind of every guy's buddy. Like she's one of those girls who hunts and you know, she's everyone's friend, and so the guys don't see her as a romantic possibility.
Interesting.
And so she went and
I kind of like that, because I feel like Daphne would.
Right.
She's clearly like she can hang out with the boys. Like
right.
obviously when she's
right.
grown up
she
with
holds,
brothers.
She holds her own very, very
absolutely.
Well. But the other thing is the meet cute. The meet mm-hmm. cute with Simon is when she knocks Burbrook out.
Oh, I
so,
love that. That's so, I feel like that. I think I like that you get the context of this Simon and Antony's relationship. I like that they
right.
have that moment and they have the dinner and all that stuff. But I do like that idea. Like I feel like I like it kind of better in the show, just to give them context of who they
right.
are, just so that they have an idea of what their situations are, or at least her situation. And but I kind of that's kind of funny,
right? Well, and so she's not the most beautiful girl. She's not whatever, but she doesn't see herself. By this time, she doesn't see herself as beautiful anymore.
Mm.
And so
I feel like her seeing herself as the diamond is good in the show. I feel like it works with some of the conflicts that she has later on with like how she sees herself, but also kind of like, oh my god, I need to find somebody. I'm kind of still desperate.
Right.
Because Simon at the dinner is like desperate, and it's just like to find a husband. But like it's like mm-hmm. not just desperate, but she's
right.
just desperate.
That term about her, yes.
Yes. And it's I feel like that's good because it's like she, even though she is very desirable to everybody, she's still very desperate to find somebody who's
she's
a match.
She's almost unattainable. Yes. Right. And so there are things about this, and I'm not going to go through like all the books, but I felt like after reading the books, that first season tried to condense like plot lines from all all eight of the books into one season because they probably didn't know if they were going to be renewed, like, all of those things. So there are a bunch of different plot lines that are thrown in there that are, and I think that's part of the reason they can go so off book in the following seasons because it's like, well,
they've gotten a lot of
used
stuff.
That one.
Yeah, they've already gotten a lot of them
right,
in there.
Right, but this, you know, that this episode, it one of the things I love about the show as compared to the books is, first of all, it does kind of let go of a lot of the structure, the real historical structure.
Mm-hmm.
But it also allows for this embodiment of the characters, like the fleshing out of the characters a little bit more that doesn't exist in the book. I mean, some of it does, and obviously you get more about like Daphne personally,
mm-hmm.
but there's a lot of character development in seeing them and seeing how they interact and how that chemistry works that is really remarkably well done.
Yeah.
So with that, segue into like how theatrically you were seeing.
I feel like we've touched on a lot of them. I feel like the little things that you notice that are explained a little bit later, especially with Simon reacting to his father being mentioned a lot and his stuttering and his relationship with Lady Danbury, which is explained later. The little subtleties with that, with the stutter and just his like his whole demeanor changing whenever that's his history is brought up is very, very interesting. I love the family dynamics. I feel like all of the actors who are the Bridgertons in particular have amazing chemistry with each other, and you can see that they are having a lot of fun with that. I think that some of the standouts in particular are Daphne, especially, is a big standout in this one in particular, just because she has most of the screen time anyway, but she gets those moments where she's unsure of herself and you can see a little bit of her wall crumbling, even though she's trying to build it up to prepare herself for this. She's still having to understand in the process of doing it. It's like different, especially given the circumstances of her brother acting like a dick. And I feel like that's really great. I feel like she does a great job. And especially in the final dance scene, like you see like the chemistry between the two main leads. I feel like they did a great job with little subtleties of just like looking when they're gazing into each other's eyes, you can see them kind of just like, oh wait, what the fuck. It's like, oh wait, okay,
yeah.
Did not expect that. Because you see that it's a different dynamic from when they had dinner or whatever, because they kind of noticed that it's like, oh, we can be friendly or whatever, I guess. I mean, I kind of like the banter, but as soon as they dance with each other and have to act like they're in love, they kind of see a little bit more of that there, and you can see it in their eyes, and it's really nice. And even, and like, you can hear and see her breathing pick up a little bit, and it's like, oh god, yes. And
chemistry.
And you can also see his, like, gaze softening a bit when he's looking at her, and it's really sweet, and I don't know, I just like all that. There's gonna be a lot of, like, the romantic stuff being explained with this section of the podcast with, like,
right,
how they are showing that they are in love and, like,
right,
little subtleties there.
Right.
But, yeah, I feel like they all did a really good job. So.
I do, too. What would you say? I have some favorite parts.
Okay, yeah. We're going to do a best part, worst part, or favorite or least favorite part.
Yes.
I have some, but you can go first if you
want. Well, mine... And
let's start with the best part,
okay,
or favorite part.
Right. So, my best parts are the music, because as you know, and we've talked about this in the Star Wars context, and we may do Star Wars stuff at some point. But
it makes the... It really
I am very score sensitive. Like, you know, it makes or breaks, like, a scene for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the score is, like, you know, what are
she
you
has a background
that?
In music, so that's...
Well, yeah, it's been a while. But, you know, I do, like, I am very sensitive to it. Like that whole continuity is so beautifully done. And especially the last dance is, like...
Oh.
I'm such a romantic anyway, so...
Oh,
like,
yeah,
oh,
same.
Yeah, oh, this is... So great.
I'm like, I feel very lonely right now, and it's very sad. This is going to be most of the podcast for me personally, because I'm very lonely. And I'm like, I want that. It's just like, whatever. But
we deserve that, and we want that for you.
I appreciate that. But, like, just watching it is just like, oh, shit.
So what were your best parts?
Oh, the last dance. And her knocking him out was great.
Yeah.
I think there are little things with, like, the dinner scene is great, but I think my favorite part was The Last Dance.
Yeah.
Because that's just, it's really great. I think that they, it's just really well done. Least favorite.
Lady Featherington in every...
I feel like that's going to be, you're going to be a broken record with that.
I hope not to be, but I mean, I got to tell you, like, every... the actress does a great job.
Oh, Lady again, it's nothing against any of the actors. They all do an amazing job in this.
But
we hate the characters. We don't hate the actors.
Oh my God, vomit. I just, you know, like everything about her is just dreadful. Like the clothes and the way she treats, you know, her own children, the way she treats Marina, you know, her interactions with her husband is like, bleh. I mean, I just, awful.
She thinks she's master of the universe and she needs to have her way, and it's so stupid and annoying.
And so you juxtapose it with, like, Violet.
Violet, and who's amazing, and we love Violet, so.
So, there you go.
I feel like my least favorite part is Anthony acting like a dick. And, because the way I'm defining least favorite is the one that made me so angry that I could not stand it because I wanted to yell at him. And I think I did yell at him while we were watching because we were watching it together. And, like, live commentary, me just being like, fuck off! Or, like, no, stop it! And just, like, a lot of my notes in my notes.
She does do that.
And a lot of my notes are just kind of like, go away, Anthony. Like, stop acting like an idiot. Like, just let her do her thing. And I think that those are the parts that really made me angry. And so I didn't like that. And also, he didn't need to do that. Yeah. Like, he didn't need to act like that. And he didn't...
Well, the Burbrook business.
That's another thing. Like, him promising her to Burbrook is so stupid.
Well, again, it's that stupid ownership concept, which is just...
I hate Burbrook. He's the worst. But I would say that.
So we're going to be grading these episodes on a typical American grade scale of A through F, right?
Yes.
So how would you grade this episode?
I think that it's a really good pilot. I feel like I think the only thing that kind of holds it back in a certain way is that you have so many characters and so many plot lines to start and so many things to build on, and you have just so many people to meet. I feel like when I first watched it, I was a little bit overwhelmed. But I'd say it's probably an A- for me. I realize I'm probably being very generous, but, like, I think that it works really well. It sets up the main plot very well. You can see the dynamics with all of the characters pretty easily just through the acting and some of the blocking and stuff like that. I feel like it does that, establishes all of that very well. So I'd say about an A-. I don't think it's going to be it's definitely not my favorite episode of the entire series, but I think it's up there. It's really good.
I gave it an A- also.
I thought you were judging me because you were like, oh, it's a B.
My mother is judging me. Which, you know, that happens. But
yes, it does.
It did not happen in this case. It was more like me like, oh, wow, we saw this the same way. I agree with, like, everything that you said about, like, how it acts as a first episode. I also, you know, I would add that the production value is just so beautiful.
The people who put this on, like, every little detail is so impressive. Like, kudos to you. You're amazing.
Right, exactly. And I know, again, you know, we may at some point talk about, like, you know, anachronistic things, like, you know, like,
whatever.
As they come. But, and the queen as a character and all of that stuff. But I feel like this is such a beautiful fantasy.
Yes.
And that is what it's meant to be. Mm-hmm. And it draws you in. And the characters are so engaging that you're like, oh, I want to see more.
And there's mystery. And it's just like, oh, why don't you like your dad? Like, why?
What's up with that?
Is Anthony such a dick? because I don't know. I don't think we mentioned this, but there is a symbol for Anthony, which is his father's watch that is brought in. And
tick,
it is.
Tick, tick.
Tick, tick, tick. But yeah, that, I don't know why I brought that up now, but...
because it is brought in with this. And I do think, you know, that that's something that's probably going to come up later, but this was really, really fun.
I'm
really enjoying it. So,
yeah.
We will be back.
Yes, we will.
With more buzzed binging.
Yes, for the second episode of Bridgerton's first season called Shock and Delight.
Ooh. Yeah.
I wonder what that entails.
I think we don't know.
I think we do, because we watched it before.
Okay. But we will share our thoughts with you.
Yes.
We will be back soon, and enjoy.